we at Weaver do believe that embedded finance needs to be much simpler for businesses, both the SMBs and the corporates alike. One of the key challenges actually is the compliance and regulatory aspect of offering financial services. It's a regulated industry. And so being regulated means that there's sometimes a lot more to take into consideration. And you actually have to build a company with that in mind. We've really seen the last year certainly play out in that way. And we do believe it's really important, really necessary to largely handle the compliance and regulatory challenges for our customers. It's actually the only way for embedded finance to really gain truly broad adoption. Because if you're not doing that, then the end customers aren't getting what really is best for them. So at the end of the day, the solutions that we are bringing are really more use case driven. We are a product-led company, and we are really looking to make sure that the solutions and the product offering that we have are actually very dedicated to very specific needs and solving very specific business problems.
Welcome back to Purpose-Driven FinTech. I am your host, Moni Millares. In today's episode, we speak with Regina Bao, CFO at Weaver. Regina is a proponent of merging purpose and profit by not thinking of business as a zero-sum game, but as an endeavor to growing the pie together. We discuss how measuring customer sentiment helps us understand the actual impact we're having in customers' lives. And I love this approach because it doesn't matter the amount of money that you have in the bank account, your financial well-being may not be reflected in that amount. We go personal as how, as an ethnic minority and a woman, she has reached C-level as a CFO, and we get her thoughts about how to break the ceiling, allies, and co-conspirators. Weaver is an embedded finance solution that supercharges revenue and customer experience for digital business. There is a debate that today every company can be a fintech, but fintech requires specialist knowledge. So Weaver focuses on making it simple, safe, and regulatory compliant for businesses to integrate financial services offering. We discuss their customer segments and their pain points, including non-talked about much segment of HR tech. If you enjoyed the episode, please give it a like, subscribe on YouTube, follow and leave a 5-star rating in Spotify and Apple. Remember to connect in LinkedIn to keep the conversation going. Regina, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
Okie dokie. So let's get started. I am really looking forward to this conversation. A, because of the product that Weaver has, and B, because you're a CFO, a woman, C-level, and that is always an exciting conversation. So looking forward to it.
Thank you. It's always great to speak to other people about it as well. And so hoping to be able to have some great conversation today.
Excellent. Okay, so let's get started. This podcast is all about how can we have more impact? How can we accelerate impact in customers' lives? We ask questions like, hey, how can we add more value to customers? How can we use technology and the ecosystem for good and actually move the needle when it comes to financial stress? And how can we make it better for fintechers? Because we work on this, right? So let's start with, in your opinion, how can we build more purpose-driven fintechs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I actually step back a bit and I actually think about the fact that we need to start with the recognition that actually it's not a zero-sum game, meaning you don't have to choose between business and profits compared to purpose and society good. In fact, I think they can coexist. And because they're not necessarily working in this zero-sum game, shareholders and stakeholders should actually be able to collaborate. I also believe, too, that companies with strong ESG agendas are often trusted partners for their customers. They can create value for investors and the communities in which they operate. And even more important, they can attract and retain the best talent. So we're really talking about a virtuous cycle between society and profits, and that they can coexist to support one another effectively. Let's work together to increase the pie, this pie of wealth. We're not shrinking it at all when we work together.
Yes. And I love that idea because we are talking about growing the pie When we collaborate, when we come together, the pie gets bigger. Therefore, it's a win-win for everyone, which is amazing. And that I think that's a shift that we're starting to see. This year, everyone is like, partnerships, working together, we're growing the pie together.
Yeah.
I love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think people have been talking about it for some time. And I know there are plenty of companies and plenty of people who strongly believe in this. Also now with governments and countries really starting to make sure that ESG is part of the DNA of the country and the way how businesses are being asked to operate, sometimes required to operate as well, that recognition will actually help make it even grow fast.
Definitely. And that is key because now it's not just an individual founder, individual CEO, but it's the ecosystem and the governments. Therefore, there is like this energy behind it. So it should be better.
Yes, I agree.
So tell me more about Weaver. What do you do and what's your purpose?
Yeah, so Weaver's purpose is to bridge the gap between digital experiences and financial services. So we do this by enabling software builders to offer relevant financial services at the point of need to better serve their customers. This actually also means that we're working towards a world where finance and digital are truly seamlessly intertwined and that the relevant financial services there are actually thought through beforehand, right? Because you need to actually be thoughtful in what you're offering as part of the overall product offering. We do work with businesses of all size, but not just only small ones, but certainly what you would call medium-sized businesses as well. But we also know that when you step back and you look at what's happening in the SMB world, there are actually many SMBs that aren't actually able to get the kind of financing that they actually need. So they're actually not able to do the good that they want to do. Being underbanked and underserved is a common word. Describe it financially for people, but at the same time too, what this, it's not as just as simple as that. It actually means that there's a productivity gap between SMBs and the super large corporates. And as we all know, SMBs and also very small companies are usually the backbone of country. The world does not run on large corporates. They run on a variety of companies of all sizes and backgrounds. And so that's one of the reasons why we think this is not only just like a really important purpose, but it's actually a really chunky need that many people need to work towards as well, not just Weaver.
Definitely, because like you say, SMBs are universally, like in every single country, they are like 99% of the companies. So it is key that we serve them better as an industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And SMBs and oftentimes start out as a couple of co-founders or maybe a single founder growing that business who has an idea to offer, but they're also thinking about their families and their community. So that benefit just continues to grow because they're not just thinking about themselves, they're growing it for also the community in that way. Not all businesses start out with just thinking about profit, although that is a helpful driver as well for many people.
Definitely. Coming back to Weaver as such and your proposition, what is the hypothesis that you and the basically Exco, what's your hypothesis behind Weaver? What makes you think that you will win, given that there is so many embedded finance solutions out there?
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty hot word to today. And I think this is a great question. We are actually truly excited that embedded finance is a hot topic. I still remember with our Exco suddenly seeing that phrase, that term really explode in the SEO and in the various platforms where suddenly people started talking about it. It's still early stage, of course, but it actually means that the industry is growing tremendously and that the solutions for companies and customers are just going to get better and better, right? If you don't have competition to drive one another, nobody really looks to improve, even if they do are self-driven. The reality is that someone else is also going to bring in a great idea and then we're now going to egg each other on. It's like that race, right? And you're just the first person, but if you don't feel that person right behind you running right there, it doesn't drive you to go even faster, right? And personal bests and world records are often set by having people right there trying to egg you on. We I guess stepping back to Weaver, although it's still early days, right? And many, to your point, many different solutions are being called embedded finance. We at Weaver do believe that embedded finance needs to be much simpler for businesses, both the SMBs and the corporates alike to adopt. One of the key challenges actually is the compliance and regulatory aspect of offering financial services. It's a regulated industry. And so being regulated means that there's sometimes a lot more to take into consideration. And you actually have to build a company with that in mind. We've really seen the last year certainly play out in that way. And we do believe it's really important, really necessary to largely handle the compliance and regulatory challenges for our customers. It's actually the only way for embedded finance to really gain truly broad adoption. Because if you're not doing that, then the end customers aren't getting what really is best for them. And not only is it happening here in UK and Europe, we see it in the US in a very meaningful way. And we're also starting to see it happen in APAC. So at the end of the day, the solutions that we are bringing are really more use case driven. We are a product-led company, and we are really looking to make sure that the solutions and the product offering that we have are actually very dedicated to very specific needs and solving very specific business problems. I think the BaaS model is a great model as well to be able to offer people a broad range of things. However, if left unchecked, it can be by accident headed in the wrong direction. And that's what we've seen regulators really now start to think through. Gosh, this is actually really important. And that's why compliance is really being tuned into the way we think about our use cases.
Yeah, I love that. Let me summarize that like in three key points. So basically, we're saying simplicity.
Yes.
Simplicity is key. And we know as product people that to make something simple, it's not that straightforward.
No, it's not.
It's an art to make things simple. And something as complex like embedded finance, like you say, there's the regulatory element. So basically, you're bringing the tech, the simplicity, and the regulatory element so that it makes it easy for customers, in these cases, SMBs, to enable financial solutions to their customers as such.
Yes.
Love it, because it's very, it's not, we offer embedded finance. It's the simplicity, the regulatory as well. Amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if I go back to impact and purpose as such, if we think of the UK alone, now in 2024, the average person has £11,000 in savings. 46% of Brits have £1,000 or less in savings, and 25% have 200 or less. That to me sounds like a crisis. And as much as we've grown as an industry and fintech has had a ton of impact in the past 10 years, I think the impact we've had is not enough because the pain point from customers is still there. And if anything, it's growing. So a very relevant question that we need to start thinking about as an industry is, what do we need to be doing today as fintechers and as an industry such that we have 10 times the impact in 5 years, not in 10? What's your take?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to be a bit big picture here. It sounds a bit generic, but you really do need to have a sense of the importance of the customer. Are you truly customer-centric? And I know these are natural buzzwords and everybody talks about, but what that actually also means is that you're really thinking about the need of the customer and what actually helps improve things, right? So if I go back to some of the things that we were talking about earlier, companies looking to balance the elements that make up ESG is actually quite important. Naturally, for us being in fintech, right, the payments and the financial ecosystem, ESG, it makes sense to be a natural component and a key component of this ecosystem. And since payments and financial services really do touch upon all aspects of life, all aspects of the global economy, we in our industry have a huge opportunity to influence, to set standards, and to really create the natural resiliency and the transparency to offer and fuel this, what I call a virtuous cycle. I think the other element of it is that if you truly are customer centric, you actually are then regularly speaking with customers and really knowing their pain points. It also helps companies really also figure out and decide how to focus the offering, the services that they are to really make an impact. And, you know, to the earlier point where we first started, right? So then you have business and societal good really work hand in hand with one another.
So I love that idea because, of course, I'm biased, right? I love the idea. Sometimes I think we companies across the world, not just fintech, like any company, we can say that it's like customer centric.
Yeah.
But actually, it's kind of customer centric in some cases, right?
I know.
So the question to follow up on this conversation is, let's assume that we all become genuinely customer centric and we can have 10 times the impact in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
How do we know that we got there? What things could we measure to tell us, yep, we made it?
Exactly. I think about the pie and the growth of the pie. I think back to the comment we were just speaking about earlier that wealth is not a fixed pie, right? And if we're actually seeing nations and groups of people being in a better place generation after generation, or in a certain number of years, and you can see that progress, then hopefully what you're seeing is that overall growth is really changing things. And then you hopefully also start to see the impact of what we're all doing. It's probably a bit of an altruistic view, but it would be great to see people just being better off as the years go by. And more importantly, not having others being left behind. Because now I'm going back to the element of it's not a zero-sum game. You can actually move forward together, not just have one forward and then the others. It is going to be a hard measurement, right? Because if you're thinking about societal good, you actually have to look to see if the overall averages, which don't always speak to everything, right? Because averages aren't necessarily best numbers. There will be outliers, right? But how do you make sure that groups who can sometimes be left behind, either because of something very structural or because of something that just naturally happens as a fallout of something, an unintended consequence, perhaps, that those groups are also progressing forward. This is not easy to do. And if we're taking it back to your original point around seeing individual people, for example, the Brits you mentioned, who actually don't have a lot of savings, right, on there, how do we make sure that they have access, that they do grow? The other thing I think is that if you naturally see people also feel comfortable in their environment, right, and not just accepting that the barriers of entry are actually making them feel a bit lost, right? That empathy as well, which sometimes you measure in consumer sentiment, which is economic indicator, right? Those polling elements will actually give you an indication of whether or not we're progressing. So I am actually speaking about not just profits in a company. I'm actually speaking to a bigger picture, adjusting, growing, and hopefully getting much better over time.
Yes. And I love that you bring the emotional side as well, because money is emotional. That's why it's stressful, right? Because we're tied with money. It's stressful. So if we manage to improve that customer sentiment, then that's like a beautiful metric. I don't think we have a customer sentiment metric worldwide.
No.
I think that doesn't exist.
No,
that's going to be great. You guys can do a report on that.
So governments do from time to time measure something called consumer sentiment in their own country, right? It's a poll, an indication of hopefully how the people who are living there about things. It'll include everything from how people think about the political environment to, of course, their financial well-being, right? And to things that are happening not just only in their local communities, but what they also watch on the telly or on the radio, if they're listening to that on the podcast and all the various streams of media that people gather news and information from, that actually can swing groups of people to feel positive or not. Right? And I actually think these things are actually really important for companies to really think through. So
definitely. And to understand exactly the feel of the nation.
Yeah. You know how, if I take it back into the company or customers, even people often say that people will long remember how others made them feel.
Yes.
More than sometimes the individual elements themselves, which is also why it's important to take care of employees and really think about them. They are your biggest assets and hopefully your biggest promoters of your brand. And that's also, so even this in this element of the ecosystem of just the company, it's harder to apply it, obviously, in bigger terms. But that's actually a one way to also think about the impact that you have.
Yes. And I want to build on that because I totally agree. We cannot talk about purpose without an impact, without talking about people. So I want to touch on what I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Women in fintech, women in the C-level. So there, we know about their statistics and there's also stories. We know about women who have been working in a company for X years. They still don't get the promotion. They still don't get a salary rise. They hit the ceiling. They don't get to management. They don't get to C-level. Regardless of which country they live in some cases, it's just women. In some cases, let's say you and I in the UK, we're ethnic minority. So there's many elements that play in this game.
Yeah.
However, you made it to the C-level.
I don't know if I made it, but
you made it to the C-level. That's a big achievement on its own. So what is your take? Can you share any insights on how we can break the ceiling and more women can reach the C-suite?
Thank you for that very generous background on myself. I don't know if I have a magic answer.
No,
I really don't, because there's so many things at play, like you said, right? It's a little bit of hard work, a little bit of opportunity. Sometimes it's a little bit of luck, right? It's about finding the right timing. You prepare enough, you do enough so that you put yourself in a place where when the timing comes, you're ready. But there is that element of being recognized as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you need to step out of your comfort zone a little bit to find your own tribe, if you will, and your own supporters that will help you open doors, not just because someone is saying, oh, come hire Regina, but just, hey, something great to learn, you know, get in touch with this person so you can just expand your universe a little bit. There's a notion of thinking about allies that we often talk about in this whole bit, but there's actually another notion that people talk about, which is about what they call co-conspirators. I'm not sure if you've heard of that term. I can't even get the words out. But allies sometimes are just put together and are together to solve a very specific item. And when it's done, there's an element of completeness or finished element, right? And people move on. So it's longer term, right? Who's there to support you all along the way? So who's there to also, when you're working on something, someone's going to help push you there. But the moment you're done for that particular moment, because no one's ever truly done with things that they want to grow in, then when it's someone else, how can you step in to keep push them or help support them along the way? So there's this actually notion of co-conspirator that is starting to gain traction in the way how people talk about support. I guess I've always wanted to try to do my best. And hopefully I'm also continuing to help people understand how important it is to be treated with equity, right? And I know people talk about equity, people talk about equality, that they're actually a little bit different, right? Equality sometimes is about treating everyone exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. But equity also takes into the notion and the thought that not everybody begins in the exact same place.
Mm.
And so some people need a little bit more of a helping hand. This builds on a little bit what I just talked about earlier about making sure that people aren't really left behind. And if there are people that need a little bit of extra support, it would be great for us to be able to say, let's just try to get everybody to move forward together and grow together. And I think I hopefully have found lots of great people to be in my support network to help me, as well as hopefully me helping others and hopefully grab onto the opportunities that come my way.
Yes, I love that idea because it is not equality. No. Like you say, it's not equality. You use the right words, that it's let's acknowledge that different people had different backgrounds, starting line, different experiences. So everybody comes in a different step, let's say 1 to 10, everybody comes in a different step. That's it, because of everything that they had to overcome to get where they are today.
Yeah.
That's it. Without adding any judgment or lens, man or woman, it doesn't matter. And then what we're saying is, hey, instead of looking for equality, is let's have a lens that allows us to customize, quote unquote, customize the growth and support that we need for every single person, such that we can elevate them.
Yeah.
Because when we elevate each other, then the pie gets bigger.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, you also think about business, right? Fintechs, as well as many companies who are also trying to drive change and innovation. The reality is that people are trying to solve something where they see a gap. So someone is trying to uplift something and improve something along the way. It's actually not that different of a concept, at least not when I think about it.
Yeah. Awesome. So now I want to move to part two of the episode, where now we go deep in customers, in challenges, in differentiation as such. So I'll start with, let's think about embedded finance.
Yeah.
And this is more like a vision question. And I like that you sometimes I'm like, yeah, I'll go like big picture. So now let's imagine it's fast forward. We're in 2030. How do banks, fintechs, and non-financial services coexist? If we did do a good job of using embedded finance, how does that world look like?
Yeah, there's a concept out there that with embedded finance, everyone's a fintech.
Yes.
I don't necessarily know if I necessarily believe that, but I do believe that fintechs are actually specialists for what they do. And given that it is a regulated industry, it is not so easy for everybody to truly be. And right. We also believe that non-financial service companies will offer access to financial services within their software and offer that to their customers. So I think that we can and should coexist. Fintechs oftentimes are smaller than the big financial service companies. So they will be a bit more narrow in their focus, and then they can really take that time and effort to improve just those things, which now means that they don't need to be big and broad. They can be there very focused. And if they can actually improve that, you've actually driven innovation as well.
Right? Of course.
It's a big focus on making sure that actually goes well. To some degree, that is actually one of the best elements of working in fintech. You don't have to be big and broad. You don't have the luxury sometimes to be big and broad, but you can now make sure what you do is truly best. And you're going there to make sure that what you actually offer then is also really tailored and really what will serve the customer the most.
Cool. So I want to build on that. So like you just said, like building a fintech solution, it's not easy. It's complex. We are specialists. There's a lot of regulation behind it. And that's why companies like Weaver exist as such, right?
Yeah.
So can you go a little bit deeper? And when we think about your customers, what is the problem statement that you're solving for them?
If part of our goal is to unite the world of digital and finance, first, there's a pretty significant hurdle to overcome to think about that. It's actually too hard for software companies to just offer payment services to customers, and sometimes also too risky for financial institutions to offer financial services via the SaaS businesses themselves. So therefore, actually, what we're trying to do is merge them together, right, into one place. And so that you can come in as a business, especially a non-financial service business, come in, work with a company like Weaver to then offer the financial services in a safe way for everyone all around. Safe for the customers who use it, safe for you as a non-financial service company being the conduit to it, and safe also for the regulators as they try to make sure that overall everyone is in a good spot. That's what one of the things that we're trying to solve for. We actually take quite seriously this element of compliance and regulatory that we spoke about earlier. And it's actually a big mindset within the company. By hopefully embedding, using the word again, that into what we also do and is a big part of what we do. We hope to be able to bring those two worlds together, but in a unique way, but solving very specific business problems, but also making sure it's good for everyone all around.
Yeah. So now building on, hey, we're solving specific business problems. Do you target specific segments?
Yeah.
And how do these differ?
Yeah. So we have a few different use cases that we work with. So one is employee benefits. One is expense management. We also look at accounts payable. And we also look at SaaS subscriptions. And so we do work, for example, if I take employee benefits as one element, we work with a number of large players and challenges who need to solve for low engagement with the benefits, as well as some patchy benefits coverage across multiple markets. Because with the world now being a bit, not only needing to work in the office and actually having the luxury to hire people all from all over, you need to be able to provide employee benefits, not just this location, but actually much more broadly speaking, right? So in this particular example, our solution helps HR tech and employee benefit custom SaaS businesses to use financial services to unlock access to more suppliers by the category of spend that they have, and also to give employees control over the kinds of perks that they pick that will benefit them the most. And so that's one area that we try to solve for. We do have a number of employee benefits platforms as our customers. And so one example is that by giving the HR manager the customer's ability to customize the benefits packages for their employees, they have the employees redeem those benefits at a whole bunch of categories of suppliers. And then what we've also seen is that when we go back to measure, we've actually seen reports where there's actually a much higher increase in engagement with the benefits themselves. We've also seen, because now it's more automated as well through the systems, right, a 90% reduction in admin time to administer the benefits.
Oh,
and
wow.
Also see, too, more importantly, able to reach a number of people in a somewhat more cost-effective and cost-efficient way. And cost isn't just about only the expense of providing the benefits, it's actually also the time to administer the benefits, right? You can easily then grow your company, have much more sticky, hopefully, employees back to your company and your brand, and you can recognize your employees for all the good work that they're putting in.
Yeah. I have to confess, you just opened my eyes. Like, I had not thought about like embedded finance in the vertical of HR tech and employee engagement. But it, of course, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And hopefully, too, it's another way to make sure or help your employees, encourage your employees to be not only just sticky to you, but to be your biggest PR channel for your brand as well. But it goes back to purpose that we've been talking about. You believe in your company's mission. You believe in what your company's trying to achieve. You feel good being there. You're naturally going to put in much more. And then hopefully it has a much wider range of good that it delivers beyond just the company itself.
Definitely. Talking about branding, if I go to Weaver's website as such, you have this phrase, it's very catchy phrase that says financial services at 2x your revenue. What does that mean?
It means that adding financial features to software will actually give the software companies more opportunities to improve monetization and also bring in net new revenue as well.
Mm.
So it'll keep the customer stickier. And it also means that since the financial services and hopefully relevant financial services are provided at the right point in time, so we call point of need, right? You're actually giving opportunities for your customers to make decisions more quickly, right there and then. They can execute upon something because time is money for everyone and being more efficient all around. It also means too that the customers are then able to focus on other things, not just about trying to find financial services they might need. One of the examples, perhaps a bit humorous when I think about it, I tend to think about what was one of the more original forms of embedded finance, and it's actually like going to the car dealership. So when you're trying to buy a car, many people will either have all the cash themselves if they're lucky enough to do that, or they might need some sort of financing. But if you have financing, oftentimes in the older days, I remember when I many years ago when I was looking at work, I would bring in my own financing, which I've had to do a whole bunch of homework before I even got to the dealership itself. Clearly, the dealership would also have their own financing arm right there because, gosh, they're trying to upsell you. They can get another, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 100 pounds from you every single month to get manual locks, not get manual locks, I'm sorry, and have automated locks, car locks. We haven't bought a car in a while. They're trying to keep you there. And embedded finance, because we embed it into the software, your customers don't need to leave your ecosystem to access relevant financial service. That dealership knows the moment you walk out, you might not come back.
Yes.
That's why they have built-in financing arms there to try to convince you, unless you did your homework and you brought in your own, right?
Exactly.
So that's one of the reasons why I think embedded finance is so exciting.
Yeah. And then you did say, hey, time is money.
Yes.
So let's say that I'm the car dealership and I'm like, yes, I want to work with Weaver. And then we go into the, hey, we kick off the project, we go into implementation mode. What are the most common challenges that businesses have when working with a company like yours?
Yeah, so there's always some friction, right? And the reason is because it's about balancing the need for what I'll call banking level security versus perfect SaaS experience, right? There always is some friction, and it's actually good friction. And it comes from a place where, because it's a regulated industry, you do need to protect customers, right? You need to set a high enough bar so that you don't have funny business happening, right? So it's not necessarily ideal for people who are wanting to get up and running immediately, but if they understand that there is a need to double check to make sure what we call the KYC, or know your customer, or KYB, know your the business information, is actually truly who the people in the business say they who they are, that element actually does happen. We do need to check that there are no bad actors, especially unintended consequences that might come out of something that no one ever did. It does translate into more checks and balances along the way. Sometimes it will not just be the open, hey, anything goes, right? Because we need to get everybody in the ecosystem is actually safe. Companies, this is probably a bit bold, companies who promise you no friction, maybe taking risk or allowing risk to happen. It's not so different from when you make a transaction and maybe your bank or your card, if you're using credit, debit card, et cetera, they might do a check and say, hey, does this transaction really happen? Actually, that's actually a natural point of friction that sometimes we've gotten accustomed to and we let it happen, or it happens not at the best moment and it's still, and you get irritated, but the reality is that they're just trying to check to make sure it's safe. So we will be part of, our services do have that as part of the checks.
Yeah. So now if I flip that question around and I say, hey, Regina, as Weaver, as a company, what are your top challenges right now?
I can't really think of it as maybe three elements. One is scaling an organization.
Yes.
We're a couple of years old, 3 years old and a little bit more. And scaling the company is hard work. Well, we are also trying to maintain that culture while we scale. It means that a lot of things that we put in place in the early days aren't enough. So we're actually becoming a lot more policy and process driven. There's a lot more players in the mix internally who need to think about things and have the checks and balances. It's not the simple, hey, let's just do this and it just goes. So that's one part of it. There's also the element of remote working and hybrid as well, because it's not so easy sometimes. If we're not careful to maintain a balance of connection points, then you end up having potentially a culture that is just completely transactional, right? And that isn't great for the company either. And you don't grow in a good way or in a smooth way. But scaling an organization is one. The funding environment is not great in general, right? It's actually not only just the funding environment, it's the whole entire economic environment. So all sorts of businesses are going through challenges. And then specific to financial services and fintechs, can't also rule out and put off the whole entire regulatory environment. But the regulatory environment is actually really critical to keep in mind. It's there to make sure that there are positive outcomes for customers, and those standards are maintained. And we actually do believe that this is a really good thing.
Perfect.
We got to work through this.
Yes, we do. Thank you. Thank you. That is, I think that's spot on, as you were saying, hey, scaling companies. I'm like, yeah, it's totally different when you're just getting started versus your year three, four, like then your year six, and you're like, oh, we need to do this again. Like, it keeps evolving. As we're getting towards the end of the episode, I have two more questions for you. Question number one is a question from the community as such. So we have Andrew Smith. He is the co-founder at Tenoscope. Mm-hmm. And he wants to know, how can you balance the impact motive with the profit motive? And I thought that was perfect for a CFO.
It's a hard question to answer.
It really is, right?
You have to wear two hats. And I think that's why it's so hard, right? Mm-hmm. Because on one level, you do need to make sure that you earn enough as a company to be able to deliver on your next set of goals, right? The profit motive is not going to be the last thing you think about. Let's just put it that way. You have to keep that into consideration. Otherwise, the company doesn't succeed either. And you end up having a situation where employees don't stay. That said, the impact motive then becomes making sure that we keep in mind that customers are really important. And if you are actually able to make sure that you are helping your customers succeed in their business by providing the best possible service and product offering as much as you can, then in theory, the price is less of an issue. People are naturally coming to you because you have the best, right? So there is a bit of a virtuous cycle there, right? Because if you don't provide what's good enough, no one's going to buy at that price. And pricing really is also quite emotive. It's psychological as well. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the buyer is trying to think through, for this amount of money that I'm going to pay, is it worth it? If I can get something similar, or it might be worse, but it's good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to go somewhere else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's a good way to think about it. And I was very intrigued because, like, it's coming from a CFO. It's your job is to optimize profit. I'm like, oh, what is she going to say?
Absolutely. We make trade-offs all the time. And we have to, we're very lucky. We have a really great team, I think. And we try really hard to balance the numbers with the impact, right? And we try also really hard to make sure that the important thing is actually the customer. That's a really important element in the company. So the finance teams, for example, and also even the compliance teams as well, teams that you don't naturally think will be trying to support commercial. A big part of what we do is trying to make sure we keep that commercial element there and the customers in mind. And we do have occasional knockdown debate, as you would expect that a healthy friction to be, right? But if you don't actually have those really open conversations and really have leaders and actually, frankly, employees at all levels consider various perspectives, you're actually not going to be able to keep your customers if you don't do it appropriately. So we do want that natural friction to happen, but we do want to have the healthy debate.
Yeah, debating is important. It's just part of business, right?
Yes, it is. It's not black and white, right? So business is quite everything in between oftentimes.
Exactly.
Yes.
As a very last question, I've been loving this episode. It's really good. Thank you, Regina.
Thank you.
So to close the episode, if there was one thing, but only one thing that you could change that had the most impact to customers, staff, to customers, colleagues, and shareholders, what could that be?
Big question. I probably think about diversity. And I don't mean just diversity in the ones that quite obvious that you can see, but actually that consider the perspective that diversity is also about the invisible things that you cannot see, right? And sometimes if you only do the measurement of diversity, or you consider things about diversity only in what is quite visible, you're actually not capturing it holistically. This actually also filters into the way how you approach your customers as well, right? One aspect that naturally happens with diversity is that you will have multiple perspectives that you should consider, right? Or you can consider because people are raising them. You may choose not to consider them as part of the ultimate decision that you go with. But if you've actually got people and teams who are going to give everything, no judgment, everybody just brainstorm, what are the things that we're all thinking through? And then you hone in on the elements afterwards to make your decision. You actually are able then to develop products and services that actually consider your customers holistically as well. So I do think that's where why diversity is important inside the company, because it actually has an element on how you touch upon your customers. And then hopefully, as you and I have been talking about this discussion in a broader sense, right, it then naturally goes into what is ESG also intended to help solve and also help support. It's a part of a bigger conversation, I think.
Definitely. Thank you, Regina. It's been an absolute pleasure having you in the show. I love the conversation.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. See you next week. Ciao, ciao.